When I worked in TV news, I would wear something called an IFB, which is a little earpiece that would allow the people in the control room to talk to me. So that could be a producer or a director, whomever. And I always thought about how I had three voices inside of my head, especially when I was anchoring a newscast. There would be the voice that was coming out of my mouth. There was the voice going in my ear that was saying, drop page five, go live to City Hall. And then there would be the third voice, which was trying to make sense of what I was being told to do. When you communicate, especially when you communicate in a high-stakes situation, you likely have two voices in your head. You have the one that's coming out of your mouth, but you also have the one inside your head that is judging everything that you are saying and doing. And those competing voices can put you at risk. Want to know how to mitigate that risk? Stay tuned. Hi, I'm Karen Reed. I'm a four-time author, Emmy Award-winning broadcast journalist, and communication expert on helping people to own the room, whether it be a physical one or a virtual one. Welcome to Speaker Dynamics. Today, we're going to talk about the importance of being present. And this can apply not only to your professional communication, but it also can apply to your personal communication as well. What I was talking about in the intro when I said you have two voices that you are likely having inside your head anytime you're communicating, especially in a high-stakes sort of situation, is alluding to this idea of an inner critic. And your inner critic is what can put you at risk for suffering what I would call a brain cramp, because everything you are saying and doing suddenly becomes suspect. What did I just say? Boy, that sounded really stupid. Did I say something weird with my hands? We start judging everything that we are saying and doing in large and small in ways that may not even be apparent to our audience, but it could put us potentially at risk for a brain cramp. So a brain cramp is, you know, where you forget your train of thought, you forget something that you can't imagine ever forgetting. And it's because we have these two voices and we're in a high stakes situation and we want to do well. Let me give you an example that I include in any of my training that talks about, you know, having that inner critic hijack. So I was watching a debate many years ago. It was the Republican presidential primary debate. And former governor from Texas, Rick Perry, was running for the Republican nod. And he was talking about how there were these three agencies of government that he was going to get rid of if he became president. And then he was asked to list those three agencies of government. Well, he got through one, he got through two. He did not get through the third. He could not remember what the third agency of government was that he was going to get rid of. Do you think that he would ever imagine he would forget those three agencies? No, because that was standard stump speech fare. But he was in a very high stakes situation. It was in the debate and all eyes were on him and it slipped his mind. Now, was this a sign of an intellectual deficiency? I would suggest no, it wasn't. It was simply because he had an inner critic hijack that completely threw him off track and took him out of his own train of thought and put him on a different track that led to nowhere. So what can you do if you are at risk of suffering this inner critic hijack? Well, let me give you a couple of things that you can do to help ward them off. The first one is simply knowing your stuff. Now, that was not a problem for Rick Perry. He knew what those three agencies of government were. But imagine if you were going into some sort of high stakes communication and you had not prepared. You know how stressful that can be. So that does definitely put you at risk of forgetting everything, especially if you didn't know it really well in the first place. So make sure that you put the prep time in and that you've actually gotten to the point where you feel really comfortable with your content. The second thing you need to do is just recognize that you do have this additional cognitive burden and give yourself as many presentation helpers as possible. You know, and one way to do that, for example, if you are presenting virtually, is to use what I would call your hidden real estate. If you could see, those of you who are watching on YouTube, if you could see what's on my desk right now, I have papers all over the place. I have sticky notes that are stuck to my monitor. And I usually keep some sort of hard copy of what I am about to say, just to kind of keep me on track. And this is a way that I have a little bit of extra help just in case I suffer one of those brain cramps. So use your hidden real estate, things that are off camera if you're virtual. If you are in person and you're doing a big presentation, I love simple slides, but I also like having something on the slide that can help remind me of what I'm about to say. So I like to have, you know, bullets perhaps that I reveal one at a time just to kind of drive me through my presentation so that I know where I'm headed. It's just kind of, oh yeah, I wanted to talk about that. Let me tell you about that. Because all of that helps you to stay on track and helps to ward off the inner critic hijack. But the biggest thing is just to force yourself to stay in the moment. Because if you start dividing your attention between what you think might be happening and what is happening in the moment, then you really are at risk of not doing a great job in how you're communicating, how you're presenting, how you're performing. I want to share with you another cautionary tale because this is kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum. So Michael Bay is, as you may know, a really famous director, and he's done blockbusters like the Transformer movies. Several years ago, he was asked by Samsung to be the spokesperson for their Curve TV at CES, which is the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. Huge event. And he was asked to come out and basically be the spokesperson for the Curve TV, which would make viewing his movies amazing, right? So he comes out on stage. They did have a host and they did have a teleprompter. Well, Michael Bay comes out on stage and begins reading off the teleprompter, but the words that he was reading were actually the words intended for the host to read. So I've worked with a teleprompter for many, many years, and I know that it's a stressful job for the teleprompter operators to make sure that they stay in line with what you are saying. And so the poor teleprompter operator is backstage probably and thinking, oh no, he's reading the wrong words. I'm going to help him out. I'm going to scroll really quickly and make the words kind of scroll up on the screen so we get to the point where he is actually supposed to be reading. But imagine being in Michael Bay's position. He is looking at that teleprompter and all he sees are words scrolling very quickly on the screen. Now, he probably did not prepare. He probably thought, hey, I've got a teleprompter. I don't really need to know what I'm saying because I can just read it off the screen. Well, that didn't work out so well for him. So long story short, what happened was he basically had to say, I'm sorry, and walked off stage. He was not able to complete the task. Now, after the host recognized that Michael Bay was in trouble, he did throw him a couple of softball questions. How do you think the curve is going to impact the way people experience your movies? Do you think Michael Bay could have answered that question? Probably, of course. I think I probably could have made up some sort of answer to that question. But Michael Bay said after the fact that the voice inside his head, what I would call the inner critic, was talking so loudly, saying probably, oh no, 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 maybe something a little more colorful than that. But he couldn't even hear the question that the host was asking of him because that inner critic was so very loud in his head. So this was an example of a big brain cramp where you let your brain go on autopilot and it really does put you at risk. But there are also ways that you can have a smaller brain cramp. You're saying something, you think that you're in the moment and then you start veering off in your brain to something else. I have a famous one in my household that I did a couple years back where we were talking about a situation and I think it was like applying for a job or something. And I said, you know, you can't even knock on the door. And what I was going to say is without, you know, a 4-year degree. And I think I said, you can't even knock on the door without an answering machine. And my husband was like, what did you just say? That makes absolutely no sense. You can't even knock on the door without an answering machine. But I had started saying my sentence, but I had checked out midway through and somehow answering machine came out of my mouth. So we can do this all the time without fully realizing it. But that is an indication of when you mentally move on, the opposite of being present in the moment. So mentally moving on happens to us all the time. You know, for example, you know, say that you're doing a big presentation and you've practiced, which is, you know, the first step to success, but you get to, for example, the end of the content you're delivering on a slide. And you are thinking about the next slide that's coming up. And in, rather than giving the final words that you wanted to deliver on that slide one, you're already thinking about slide two. And as a result, you have a tendency to kind of mumble those final words. Maybe you even don't even, you know, look at your audience if you're in person. Perhaps you're turning around and seeing, you know, if the next slide has come up. We mumble, we don't give our words the full value, and we're actually not allowing our audience to receive it in the way that we want them to receive it. If you're doing a virtual presentation, I see this happen all the time where people mentally move on because you're juggling, you know, the technology often as well as the content that you're delivering. So say that somebody wants to stop sharing their slides. Oftentimes what they will do is they will, you know, pause in the midst of it and maybe they're, you know, clicking on the you know, end slide share and they're not giving their full value to the content that they want to deliver on the slide that they said before. They don't finish it in a powerful way. And instead, like the presentation kind of fizzles out. So what I would tell you is just allow each action to happen in the sequence as intended. Stay in the moment where you're delivering your content. If you are virtual, allow yourself the opportunity to end slide share and then continue to talk in a way that is impactful and giving the content the value that it deserves. You know, one other common scenario that I see when people are mentally moving on is when they are asked a question. You know, be honest with yourself. Whenever somebody asks you a question, especially if it's in a high-stakes situation, are you really listening to the entire question that they're asking, especially if it's a long one? Or do you start to check out halfway through and start formulating your answer to that question? That is something that I know I do, and perhaps you do as well. But not being present for the entire question being asked can be a problem because first, you may not answer the actual question. Maybe your answer is the one that relates to the first half of the question, but doesn't relate to the second half of the question. Or you may miss out on uncovering a potential issue that was suggested in the second half of the question that you didn't hear because you were too busy thinking about how you were going to respond to the first half. So being present is really essential when someone is asking you a question. And this certainly applies whether it's personal or professional. But one of my favorite things that I like to ask people to do whenever they are hearing a question is to actively listen. And active listening is an intentional skill. It's not something that most of us do innately. We hear things, which is a passive act, but actively listening, I guess passive act doesn't make sense, but we're passively hearing what is being said to us. Active listening is where you're really working to understand the meaning of what is being said, the message that is being said to you. One of my favorite tools for active listening is in the form of listening clusters. And it is actually the brainchild of Robert Bolton, who's written many books. One of the ones that I always refer to is called People Skills. And when he talks about these listening skills clusters, he has it grouped into three different categories. The first is attending skills. The second is following skills. And the third is reflecting skills. So I'm going to just give you a very brief summary of what this involves. But if you're curious, I would encourage you to read the book People Skills by Robert Bolton. So the first way that you can actively listen is by applying these attending skills. And the attending skills are basically where you are listening with your whole body. And that means, for example, having an appropriate posture relative to your conversation partner. You are squaring yourself up, for example, with them. You're not turning to the side. You're not looking like you are possibly dividing your attention elsewhere. No, you're facing them. You're squaring up your shoulders and they feel like, okay, I have your attention. The second thing you want to do is make good eye contact. And this is kind of a no-brainer, but it's really critical that you do that. I remember being in a situation where I was at a party and I had a former boss of mine who was looking over my shoulder the entire time we're talking. I'm like, she's looking for somebody more interesting to talk to. It is very apparent to our conversation partner whenever we are not using good attending skills by looking beyond the person's face. So making good eye contact with them is really critical. And the third one is just appearing physically engaged in the conversation. So you want to be listening with your whole body, meaning that you are, you know, physically showing that you are there. You are ready. Give me the question. Give me your message. I am ready for you to deliver it to me. I am open to this. The second one I wanted to talk to you about is the following skills cluster. And following skills are basically where you're encouraging somebody to continue talking. I am somebody who is constantly seeking for connections with folks I'm talking to. I just do it naturally. I love discovering that there are some commonalities, but I know that this is making me a not very good active listener because I'm not using good following skills, because I might hear somebody say, oh, I'm from Pittsburgh. Oh, really? I'm from Pittsburgh too. Let me tell you about where I grew up. And suddenly I am not following them. I am forcing them to follow me. I am hijacking the conversation and I'm taking it down to my own path. But instead, if you want to be an active listener, you want to be encouraging them to continue down their path, continue down the conversation track that they started. So that means letting your conversation partner fully express themselves with minimal intervention from you. And that means perhaps not, you know, cutting in and you know, making that connection, continuing to talk. Maybe it's, you know, asking infrequent questions. You know, maybe you just prod them to continue to tell me more. You know, one of the things that Matt Abrahams talked about whenever we were in our earlier episode is the value of saying, tell me more. Tell me more is a great following skill because it encourages them to express everything that they wanted to say, and you're not changing the course whatsoever. You are allowing them to dictate where you're headed. The third listening skills cluster is reflecting skills. And reflecting skills is basically where you're working really hard to understand the other person, truly to understand what they're trying to say to you, the question, for example, that they are asking. So one of the best ways to ensure that you understand what they're saying is by forcing yourself to paraphrase periodically what they said. You can't paraphrase what they've said to you if you haven't fully engaged in what they've said in the first place. So remember how I talked about sometimes we'll hear a question, stop listening halfway through. If you try to paraphrase the first half of the question, you're not going to get the entire meaning right. So if you know, okay, at some point I'm probably going to paraphrase this back to them, then you're going to force yourself to actively listen, to stay in that moment and to ensure that they have said their piece in its entirety. So try paraphrasing. Don't do it all the time. It'll be really annoying, but you know, do it every once in a while just to make sure that you have a common understanding of what's being discussed. You can also, you know, reflect how they feel about it back to them, you know, reflecting their feelings. So, you know, for example, say somebody had a really arduous trip from the airport to, you know, their hotel, and they're going on and on about this. What you might try to say is, wow, you know, that must have been really frustrating for you. And they might say, no, it wasn't that frustrating because I wasn't excited to get to the hotel in the first place. So you're basically holding up a mirror to their faces for them to analyze their emotions related to what they are telling you. And then you can always take like the paraphrasing and the feelings and smush them together. And that's where you're reflecting the meaning of what they're saying. So, you know, you're reflecting the facts along with how they feel about it, just to make sure that you are fully understanding what they have said. So if you find yourself starting to drift off as they are talking to you, as they're asking a question you, make sure that you try to focus on those active listening skills, those attending skills, listening with your whole body, those following skills where you're minimally encouraging them to continue And then the reflecting skills, which is where periodically you're going to hold the mirror up to their faces and say, is this what you're trying to say? Yes. Okay, great. So active listening does take work, and it certainly takes intention, but it can make all the difference in your interactions, both personally and professionally. It forces you to stay present and potentially avoid some verbal gaffes, you know, the things where you are caught saying something, you know, you can't knock on the door without an answering machine. If I had stayed present in that moment, I'm pretty sure I would not have said that. So I always like to have one big takeaway, right, for each of these episodes. And today's one big takeaway is, not surprisingly, be present. Be present in your communication. Turn down the volume of the inner critic and avoid mentally moving on to the next thing. What's happening in that moment is too important to put it at risk. So our bonus content today is actually a listener challenge. So I'm calling it Be Present Bingo. So if you go to our website, speakerdynamics.com/bonus content, there you will find a worksheet that is made in the shape of a bingo card that has a list of different active listening skills that you can use and different techniques that you can use to stay present. Challenge yourself to get at least 3 in a row, but you can, you know, be an overachiever and try to do all of them. But you can download it by going to speakerdynamics.com/bonus content and have that be your challenge for the next couple of weeks until you get to the next episode, and see how you do with your ability to stay present. So in our next episode, you're going to hear from somebody who is a master of being present. She's someone whose authenticity oozes every time that she is speaking. She is the chief marketing officer of one of the leading AI and analytics companies in the world. She also happens to be someone I've worked with for many years in a coaching capacity and also a friend. So Jennifer Chase will join us, and she's going to share a bit on why she embarked on her journey to improve her speaking skills and how it shaped her leadership communication philosophy today. So please make sure you check it out. Even better, give us a follow so you don't miss any episode coming up. And of course, please tell your colleagues and friends all about it. Thank you so much for listening today. Until next time.